everyone, and welcome to another Art and Labor podcast about the ongoing struggle to survive as an art and or cultural worker. I am OK Fox.
And I'm Lucia Love. And we're here in the studio as usual, decompressing a little bit.
Yeah. Just talking about how the winters are sort of been delayed in recent years in New York City.
Yeah, we're having one of them old-fashioned conversations about the weather. It's weird, you know? It's like the winter, it's here, but it's not here, and it could be on its way.
And we have a hurricane season in New York now. Things are changing. This is an episode that's going to touch on a lot of ecological issues.
Yeah, this is not for nothing. It's apropos.
Yes, it is.
I think we're all somewhere floating in the back of everyone's mind is ecological collapse. You know, you see a headline every single day somewhere, just wants to insert itself like, hey, did you know everything might not be all right in the future if we don't immediately work to change the carbon emissions that we're all unwittingly suffocating ourselves with.
Oh, it's so depressing. I think I get sad seasonal affectiveness disorder.
Yeah, AA sad.
AA, yeah.
Did you see the Murder Fist sketch about like a bunch of...
Forgot about Murder Fist until you just said that.
Right? Throwback.
Wow.
Yeah, there were a bunch of... kind of like Portlandia-esque figures sitting in a coffee shop, and they're like, oh yeah, I get sad. I am sad right now. I am so much sad right now.
So much sad.
And I think maybe the joke is like devolution. luxury downtime.
Yeah.
Leads to softening.
It's just the weather. Get a grip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Listen, when you're in the factory, you don't know what time it is, let alone what season. God.
Yeah. But it is so depressing to not have a window.
Yeah.
It does affect your mood. It does to not have sunlight. It drives people nuts. I'm like half convinced that like a lot of people's aggression problems come from either lead paint, like a lot of lead paint where people just turn the other, regulators just turn the other way and know that these buildings have lead paint, but just like write them off anyway.
Well, if you put regular paint over the lead paint, it's
good, right?
Yeah.
It's good. Then it makes it good, right? No. Yeah. So that's lead paint, I think, affects people's, state of mind, and I also think
neurological issues,
lack of sunlight affects people's state of minds, and which are, you know, as infrastructure crumbles and people are increasingly forced to live in smaller and more atomized rooms and work longer hours without proper breaks and things like that, it's not great. It affects people's like loneliness, I think, at this point.
Yeah. But,
and I think in the past, in like the 70s and 80s, when there was a lot more lead in everything, it fucked up people's brains and there was a lot more aggression. That's my like kind of conspiracy theory, but.
Oh, yeah. But maybe we need more lead paint to spark a revolution.
I mean, we all need to sniff paint. That's how we start the revolution.
Actually, we're going to be handing out cans of paint outside of the studio later.
Huffing for the revolution.
Yeah.
That's what art and labor is all about. No.
Well, you have to try to create the circumstance that allow a revolutionary
acceleration
to take hold. And
huffing paint is...
Yeah, just
get us there the quickest.
Find us. We'll be in the Valhalla section.
Oh, Jesus Christ. God. Oh. What a show.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I feel like just thinking about crumbling infrastructure and then also boning up on the Green New Deal, like trying to think about how people are going to feasibly enact any of these
also thinking promises. About the yellow vest protests.
I love them.
Yeah, like, and it freaked neolibs out because they were like, everybody's protesting the carbon tax. And it's like,
you're missing the point.
Come on. It's like, because you're taxing, like, people who are in much more dire straits than the actual people polluting the world.
Right.
And everybody knows that. And, like, none of our representatives, like, are brave enough to actually take on Exxon or, like,
yeah,
BP or any of these places.
We just have to, like, completely replace our representatives with people who aren't taking money from fossil fuels.
It's wild. So to get into our topic a bit.
In the next 10 years.
Murray Bookchin is our topic today.
Yay!
And
he's an absolute...
great
grandfather to us all.
He's excellent, and he's got a very holistic approach to, like, everything. Like, criticisms of him will try to box him into one thing or another, but if you actually listen to him like respond to some of that criticism, he's not so easy to write off.
No, the critics are also a little bit wing nutty themselves. Like, I was reading this one Reddit that had a very inflammatory headline that was like, was Murray Bookchin a Zionist?
Oh, come on.
I know. But, you know, it's like, people just want to reduce anything they can, because he was going off on like issues of nationalism and then like concepts of tribal identities, and like because he tries to take a long view of history, and like a lot of nuance can get lost when you look at like thousands of years of human development. People just kind of want to cut to the quick and be like, oh, wait, I learned this word. You're a Zionist. I don't have to pay attention to you now. Yeah, it's weird.
He's about self-determination, because he's an anarchist, basically. But
yeah,
he calls himself a libertarian socialist.
Believes that revolution must come from the self before it may be enacted in the public.
Which is also very in line with feminist thought, which is what he does talk about feminism a lot.
Yeah, he tips his hat to other movements and and puts them on an equal footing to any other internationalist interest.
Yes, it's great hearing him talk about all these different groups basically coming to the same conclusions as a lot of Marxist thinkers, and how this is good. Like
that. Yeah. And really, like, I like that he also comes to all of these conclusions by taking decades to work through the Marxist tradition of thought, and where he's starting out, he's like enlisted into these youth groups in the
a young communist.
Yeah, a young communist. I forget what the groups are called.
He was young communists.
But was it like Young Pioneers or it's called Young Pioneers. But that group, I think you can't be older than like 10 years old.
Yeah. He was 9.
Yeah.
I remember him saying that he was 9 when he joined the Young Communists. And then he did all sorts of shit. He worked, he poured steel in a factory and actual union organizing.
That was another decade after he became a trot.
He was a trot.
But he started out by, like, researching the Stalinist regime.
Right.
So he went, like, full spectrum of Marxism, focused on the text, was, like, devoutly involved mm-hmm. in generations of Marxist study and rhetoric.
He went to Spain. He went to France.
Oh, my God. He was, like, at every single protest that mattered.
Yeah.
68, he actually got cloned, like, 10 times so that he could end up on every continent wherever there was a protest.
It's nuts. It's nuts all the stuff he did. And because his mom or something was also an anarchist?
And his grandmother.
His grandma, yeah.
Yeah.
She
read Marx to him as, like, a five-year-old.
Yeah, and he had, like, a vivid memory of his mom, like, reading the newspaper about, like, some famous anarchist who was, like, put to death by the state, and, like, they were all crying. Oh. I'm like, that's your formative memory? That's insane.
Oh.
It's just, he's just extremely dedicated.
And then
to life.
His daughter, Debbie Bookchin, was... Yeah. Responsible for running elements of the Bernie Sanders campaign.
Like, basically his press secretary, I think, if I'm not mistaken, like, traveled with him all over the place. And
wild.
Yeah.
Leftist royalty.
It's like, I did a joke tweet that, like, nobody responded to because I don't think people are quite, in my circles anyway, at getting the Bookchin resurgence yet. But I heard a tweet posting a Murray Bookchin video being like, oh, this is that guy from NYC in Vermont that everybody's enthusiastic about. I get it now. Like, you're just sucking, like, this New York guy with a New York voice who's a socialist in Vermont.
Listen, I'll tell you the way that things are. You might hear a lot of alternative facts.
Oh my God. I don't know which one you're doing. It sounds like both of them.
And, that's actually just me. I had to unlearn my accent. Yeah. Surprise, surprise. I am also a socialist libertarian.
My book didn't do as well as it should have done because the publisher put out a different book at the same time that did a little better than mine. It's like how Bookchin gets all caught up in, like, why didn't my things take off? And it's just like, come on.
They
are now, yeah.
You were the marks of anarchism. Congratulations up there.
It's a good sensibility. I really encourage people to listen. You can listen to Post-Scarcity Anarchism on YouTube. You can just listen to it.
Yeah, easy peasy. It's like 30 minutes.
I listened to it
minutes.
Twice. It's great.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's excellent. It's just, the thing is, like, he talks about this in, I think, Post-Scarcity Anarchism. Generations are always being born and have to relearn all this stuff and go through all this stuff over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's, like, incumbent on us to really take somebody like Murray Bookchin seriously, who is, you know, like, generations before us, but extremely dedicated to learning all of the spectrum of Marxism and then having his own analysis. I think we're in a new generation. We need to be taking that really seriously and not just rehashing the wheel over and over again.
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah.
I get very frustrated when I encounter people that have, like, a self-proclaimed intellectual bent that, like, kind of refuse history, which I know, if you refuse history, there's also a history of refusing history.
Wow, could you even imagine?
How do you get yourself so far out of time or anything that comes before you that you're, like, thinking that you have a new concept when really there's so many people who have done this, like, decades of their lives.
Yes.
That's just dedicated to exactly what you could pick up on. And when it's condensed over generations, you get a 30-minute audiobook of something that took a person, like, at least
decades.
20 years. Yeah. It's like, oh, wow, decades condensed into 30 minutes. Thank you, history.
It's insane.
Wow.
And it's like, I think it's because you and me, we don't have very big egos. We kind of do.
I only have big ego about,
like, certain things, right?
My knowledge of chips.
Oh, my God.
I know what the best chips are.
But I don't know. I think, like, I encounter people with just such, like, they're like, insular. They're insulated by a particular group, and they're just like, I have all these ideas, and I'm presenting it to this particular group. And you might be the first person to present that idea to that particular group.
Right.
But it's like, why are you putting all your eggs in that basket? I don't know.
Yeah, definitely a leader of nothing, especially not thought. But
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, I guess, like, it does take a little while, though, to, you know, to amass the amount of information necessary to feel confident in having a discourse around these ideologies that are, like, deeply embedded in our every aspect of our reality. Mm-hmm. And, like, the first thing you learn is, like, you know you don't know.
Yeah.
And that can be really humiliating. And I think we've, like, addressed that before, just saying, wow, I can't believe I'm this old and I'm just starting to learn about a thinker that is offering me so much, but I'm really glad that I didn't refuse this.
Well, the thing is, we were both introduced into his work from Ursula K. Le Guin, so we definitely have some of that locked in there.
Oh, yeah.
From her, but because she was extremely influenced by him. Wrote forewords to his books, one of them at least, and The Dispossessed mm-hmm. is extremely Bookchin.
Extreme, yeah.
Like,
all in the circle.
She talked about it in the documentary we watched about her. And that's like where our curiosity came from was, oh, she really liked him. Let's look into it.
Yeah.
Because we like her.
Mm-hmm.
And
information yeah. is a rhizome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so it's like, yeah, I don't know. Let's get into some of our favorite parts of post-scarcity anarchism.
Yeah, into
just
it.
Just to give people a taste of it.
I think one of the first things that maybe is like a good introduction is like the concept of what an anarchist is and like how the figure of someone enacting these tendencies comes across in a popular kind of like characterization
yeah.
instead of what the core tenets are that are being discussed in post-scarcity anarchy.
Mm.
Like, the idea that it can be sort of this like radical punk rock thing where you just go and smash stuff and you're like, you're wild and you have no rules. There's like no law to you. Like, you're an anarchist. I think that's still like pretty popular for like a teenage
for Americans
mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which Murray, by the way, is American. Like we were saying before.
Yeah.
New York and Vermont.
And he takes the time to address the way that people conceive of this this political stance, which it's like for him, everything boils down to the dissolution of hierarchy and the ways that collectivity can enrich community. So it's not about like being an atomized individual, just going off of your own impetus.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's all, and he also deconstructs the word libertarian, sort of reclaiming it he calls right-wing libertarians proprietarians.
Yeah.
Because that's all I care about, right, is property.
Mm-hmm.
To him, libertarian was coined by anarchists in France. I don't remember when. I'm bad at remembering
these
dates and shit, but, like...
Prudhomme.
As,
was
like,
the... Prudhomme... I can't remember the rest of his name. All. He's a thinker. He only has one name now.
Oh, man. People can deal. Like we've said in a lot of our early episodes that we're more into analyzing text, look into our show notes.
Yeah.
And look this shit up yourself. That's the main idea with this podcast is
you can hear us stumbling around.
We can stumble around. And we're just, me and Lucia are processing this ourselves. We're not authorities.
Definitely
never,
not.
Never authorities. We're anti-authority.
Ooh, adopting the party line.
We're anti-hierarchy.
That is true.
So, yeah, the main thing with post-scarcity anarchism is the idea that there was a time when scarcity was endured. Think like Soviet Russia, whatever. Now, scarcity is enforced.
Right.
Think current America.
Yeah, every time you have to buy food.
Yeah, and think about all the food waste.
Think about all the locks on the dumpsters of the food you could be eating.
Yep, and how they'll bleach food. They'll just
destroy it.
Destroy it.
Oh, God, and all those terrible Border Patrol people dumping out gallons of water.
And killing a 7-year-old.
Absolutely detestable.
Murderers.
Fucking scarcity. That's one thing, people say scarcity doesn't exist, but I'm really grateful for the conversation that Bookchin creates around this term, because it's like, even though it's a man-made concept, that doesn't make it any less real.
Yeah, we're denying, we're creating scarcity.
Yeah,
it's real.
It is real.
It's man-made.
Scarcity.
Yeah,
absolutely exists, and it's harder to grapple with it when you know that it's like a part of this axis of cruelty.
God, it's disgusting. Sorry.
I know. I know.
Think about also technology, because a lot of the essays about technology, how we've come to rely on these technologies, but they are planned to obsolescence. Like,
mm-hmm.
They don't have to be. We all know they don't have to be. They could make a phone that lasts a decade or two. They choose not to.
Yeah.
Because it deeply affects their bottom line. The bill of lies we're told by capitalists is that capitalism provides the best situation for innovation and new technologies. And it's just so obviously not true, and destroying the planet. If we didn't have to remake our fucking phones every other year, could you imagine the effect that would have on the planet? Like,
yeah, I can. But you're never going to get people to cut their profit margins when they're at the top, you know, or somewhere, at least in the top three. you could talk to number four about divesting.
God.
I don't know. It is weird, but yeah, then Bookchin, he starts to get into the concept of production for itself as a means to an end, and the end is more production, and that because this is the definition of post-scarcity, is that now we've entered into an epoch of industrialization that has no requirements, really. It's like the pure, I don't know, I want to say, like, it's like the joy of industry or something, just to, like, watch an incessant, like, Fordist line of whatever you can imagine just, like, shooting out into piles and piles and ending up in dollar stores.
Oh, man. And then the dollar, yeah, man, dollar stores. I'm not going to get into a thing about dollar stores, but there's a lot to say.
Don't get me started. I love the deals.
There's been a lot of, like, recent writing about dollar stores, about how they move into struggling neighborhoods, mm-hmm. put out all the other businesses, and then raise their prices and just continue the cycle.
Yep. Predatory.
Oof. Oof. Bookchin has critiques of Marxism, but that he's still a Marxist. Calm down, everyone. he says that Marx examined the preconditions of liberation, not the characteristics of what liberation is.
Yeah.
I forget the exact quote, but it was basically that.
Yeah, I had something similar. The preconditions, and that's really all that you can describe, like, without being authoritarian. It's just like, you know, that was like pointedly one of the tenets of a good leftist, is like, the dictatorship of the proletariat would be determined by the proletariat at the time of its own emancipation.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean,
that's
really, like,
in line.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's.
But it is important to note, like, we're pointedly not describing a blueprint, because that would create a new hierarchy.
Exactly. And, like, The issue that Bookchin points out in a lot of his speeches and stuff is that, like, people have a hard time recognizing themselves as the proletariat or whatever. Or,
yeah,
like, in a post-scarcity world, it's hard to tell.
It makes perfect sense, too, because we're now learning how to redefine labor in terms of emotional, intellectual, intangible processes that, like, nonetheless have people bound to entire lifetimes of
mm-hmm.
drudgery.
yeah. I mean, you know, the critique a lot of, like, feminists and non-white people have of Marx is that it's, you know, it centers a certain experience that it isn't universal or to a lot everyone or whatever, but Bookchin references all of those thoughts, in determining what we actually want from liberation, and how that could be different for many different people.
Yeah, he didn't just go like, oh, wait a minute, all of this stuff is class reductionist. He was like, oh, wait, all of this stuff is analogous.
Yes.
Oh.
That's bitch.
Ah, I could just be intersectional by understanding everybody wants liberty.
So, yeah, he talks about how the bourgeois enforces control with technology and with statecraft,
mm-hmm.
which is the type of representational democracy bullshit that we have to participate in or whatever. The fucking garbo state actors that do not have anyone's interests at heart except their own bourgeois class interests. He's very upfront about that, but he's not like the type of, he's not like anti-voting. He encourages people to create candidates that can be directly accountable to their local communities.
Right.
Which I just wanted to mention before, which is like, so like Ocasio-Cortez could be that type of candidate if we, you know, really hold her account, her feet to the fire about like everything, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole.
I know.
That's a whole wormhole. I'm down to get into it.
I just know that we brought up the Green New Deal before.
Yeah.
So I figured I'd talk about Bookchin's opinion about statecraft.
Yeah, definitely. But I, yeah, it, oh, fuck. Well, it's no, so, okay. it's so immense. Like, I don't know if anybody realizes that the really effortless and like effective statecraft of Ocasio-Cortez. It's just like, it's like bringing us to crystallize a lot of the concepts that we're interested in. Like, yeah, yeah, totally. Like, I want to see things change for labor movements. I want to see ecological change. I want to see equality. And a lot of this is getting broken up into these really like nice sounding plans. But looking into the Green New Deal has like absolutely horrifying implications. Like, the deadline is 10 years. It's like decarbonizing all of our infrastructure and like retrofitting everything in the country in 10 years would be like, I mean, this is like, this is collectivization.
Yeah, I don't, yeah, fuck. It's just like,
it's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah.
I don't even know what to think about it.
And then it's like, we might see a yellow vest type thing over here if they really try to push these things onto people who can't afford for this shit to be pushed on them.
Right.
Like,
and it's like, do we even have enough resources to make the change from like 20% of our energy coming from like nuclear, like, you know, I just, or it, what about, yeah, like,
is it even possible to
all of the people who are, I mean, I don't know, like about the whatever, everybody's like on about coal and everything, which is just, it's amazing that like these two industries could exist simultaneously. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's beautiful. I love like, going back into the crystalline oasis of Bookchin saying, like, all we need to do is consider that by freeing our unconscious, we're able to make conscious changes. So if we're constantly allowing ourselves to dream a thought of liberty, then we're able to say there's a harmony that can be achieved with our environment. And like, something will come through.
Ugh, it's not.
Maybe.
it's all, I mean, if you get down to it, it's all reformist nonsense. It's like similar to the original New Deal. It's just little Band-Aids for then capitalism to double down on in a couple of years and undo, and it's not.
Yeah, we're not being released from the internalized hierarchy.
Oh my god, are we gonna get into a big struggle in our lifetime? I feel like it's gonna happen.
Once a day, every day, I have a moment where the sun just feels too hot, and then I slip into like the lens of Hell World, and I think, oh, right, what if I had to run somewhere right now? Like, you know, what if everything is just going to collapse at any second? And then it doesn't, and everybody just keeps going to work. So maybe it'll be fine.
Well, it's like, it's just, it's slow what's happening. Like, places are slowly being eaten, destroyed from the inside out, and pushed further away and less in the forefront of our minds. And eventually I think we'll just get to a part where, like in Sorry to Bother You, or the other books or whatever media that people just like, they'll just be like a bunch of people just living in their cars, which we're already at.
Oh yeah.
We talked about this on a different episode, but I think that'll become a normalized part of life. That, oh yeah, some people live in their cars.
Yeah. Well, it's like way easier for their flexible work schedules to just also have flexible home.
And they'll like start building cars for people to sleep in.
Well, I wouldn't mind having an RV though.
It'd be neat.
Yeah.
I
like it. Like a little, everything fits so neat into everything else.
Tiny home movement. That's already happening.
Yeah.
We're trying to normalize just like.
It's romantic.
Lack of space. And
you could live in a bus or something.
Lack of utilities and.
Oh my God, check out what these 20 millennials have done with cardboard boxes.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yes, queen.
Oh, wow. I love living in a shipping container. It's a modernist dream.
Yeah, there's tons of places in Brooklyn that are just shipping containers, converted shipping containers.
Until they get cleared out and turned into a Whole Foods.
Yeah. So fucked.
But then you go outside of this whole dog eat dog matrix, and I don't know, people are just planting trees all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, like, everybody needs to plant a tree.
Everybody, yeah, really, everyone should be planting a tree.
Like every year.
All the time. Whenever you can. You're like, oh, I haven't planted a tree lately. Like, but I have some notes here. Okay. There's a lot of people planting trees. It makes me feel better to know this stuff.
I want to tell our listeners, the reason why we're jumping around to environmental issues a lot is because Bookchin was one of the forefront thinkers to combine like socialism and ecology.
Yeah.
Like nobody was doing that.
And people they will criticize his conversations around this and say like, you're forgetting that we have to fight like on a strict class basis. And yeah, Bookchin is saying we need to actually think about harmony and equality with our natural habitats.
Yeah. And like, and he's really into variation. Like he talks about variation as a counter to like the neoliberal idea of diversity, just like, having, like in nature, the places that are the healthiest have a lot of variety.
Right.
Yeah,
and there are groups of people working now to reinvigorate that. But here's some things that made me feel good. China, scary place. Who knows what they're doing over there? They planted 26 billion trees along the edge of the Gobi Desert, and they're planting more. They have an initiative so that every kid who's a student 11 years old or older plants a tree every year until they graduate high school. And it's just like a fun class project that they do for their like public school system.
Yeah, similar to how our public school system has a requirement where you have to work like a certain amount of community service hours.
Well, you don't have to do that though.
In my school we did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I went to a public
You guys' schools didn't do that?
No.
Oh, we all had to do community service.
That's really nice.
I thought it was like a public school thing.
No, you just had a nice school.
That's nice.
Well, mine had a different, we had an agricultural program, but they just taught us how to like feed cows and chickens.
That's cute.
It was cute. I learned how to fix a lawnmower too.
That's a great skill.
Yeah.
I just like
different though.
I just did yeah, random stuff. Like you could kind of do anything for your community service. There's like anything would really count. You just had to have an adult sign a piece of paper saying that you did something.
Yeah, that kid like totally showed up in the community.
I picked up trash on the side of the road for one of them. And I did mailers for something for one of them. And I can't remember my other ones. But yeah, it was like a scoreboard too. Like you get a prize if you get the most hours also.
Nice. Gamify.
Yeah. Yeah. Like how they gamify like selling the wrapping paper. Did you guys do that?
No.
Oh, this is a fundraiser that the public school did to get extra funding was, this I know is not just my school because I've talked to, I heard them talk about this on Street Fight. Like I've heard people talk about this.
Well, yeah. I mean, they also, I don't think we had like Girl Scout cookies in my school. You know, there's some schools, they just don't have,
we didn't have
stuff.
Girl Scouts, but.
But other schools yeah. are like, what?
But there this was this like everywhere. Game, like basically you sell wrapping paper and the money goes to the school, but then you get these little prizes for selling certain amounts.
Oh.
So we'd be like,
maybe there was something like that.
If you sell 100, you get a Game Boy or whatever. And wow. Everyone's like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to figure this one out. Oh, buddy.
But it's just a way to get kids to do labor for free, but.
Hell yeah. And also learn how to be more manipulative. You're all going to go out there and be good capitalists.
Go you be have sales to learn. People.
Yeah. Sell things people don't need. You're cute. You can do it.
Oh my God. Little entrepreneurs.
Entrepreneurial.
It's good. I can't believe my school is the only one amongst the three of us in this room who did that.
It could. I mean, who knows? I wasn't really like a pillar of my community. Like, I'm sure the class president was like curing AIDS or something. Just, you know, just like I did a lot of community service in high school. I sold weed.
Yes, that is a huge service to your community.
Yeah,
like really, you should have gotten the Game Boy for sure.
I should have, but instead I was just nominated as a prom princess.
Wow, really?
Yeah, yeah. I lost to the class president.
Fuck.
Because she was also sitting there counting the votes. I mean, not counting them. I mean, you know, she was like, hey, you can put your vote here. And they were like, oh, I guess
she
I'll
it.
Vote for you. You're
rigged,
right there.
Robbed.
I was robbed. Definitely.
You were robbed the prom princess.
Yeah, dude, I supported a lot of weed smoking careers, and I think I should have gotten some recognition for it.
You definitely should have. But did you get most likely to
be
to
high
be a junkie
all the time
in your yearbook?
No, but I did go to rehab.
So you did win in yeah. the end. You got her.
Yeah, I got you, man.
God. No, I do not mean to make light.
Oh, it's funny though. I'm just trying to, you know, just let it all hang out.
Oh, I won prom queen, but not at my school, at pre-college art program.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
The dumbest bullshit.
Yeah, but that's great.
And then me and the prom king switched crowns because it was far more appropriate. It was me and this like gigantic gay dude who was amazing, dressed as the Tooth Fairy.
Oh, wow.
And I was dressed as a construction worker, and we switched crowns.
Hey, way to break down that binary.
You did it. Yeah. I've been breaking down the binary since I was a fucking teenager, for sure.
Hell yeah.
God.
Where do we go from here?
We went off the rails, as we do. It's already 50 minutes in.
Oh, right. Well,
But I think we should go back to our notes and just read random shit we took note of. I want to talk about the natural world and Eros-derived impulse ecology required for the impoverishment of experiences. So to me, when I heard that part, I was like, oh shit, this is about incels.
Like, yeah, definitely. But reframing it.
Yes. Like, yes.
Dude, y'all are just like working too hard, you know? You gotta relax and like learn how to tell a joke and then you can get a date. But if you're always like on your bullshit, you're not gonna have that prelapsarian lifestyle.
Yeah, and this is what I mentioned before, but the idea that like that these impulses are renewed with every new person, like with every new generation, he talks about having to learn, go through this process of like, you know, I want this, I need this, how does the state work, how does this work, like everybody has to like learn that, and then like are constantly, as a humanity, we're constantly learning this shit.
Oh yeah, we're constantly indoctrinated and punished into remembering the way that we're supposed to operate to expand profit margins. And there is an alternative. We could just learn how to take care of each other and then roll around in the grass. Because we have everything we need.
Oh, man. The thing is, I want...
I don't know either.
I want to demand that, like, because there is literally a group that's like eco-socialist and they're called Demand Utopia, and they're really interesting, like sort of modern or contemporary yippies or something.
Yeah, it was a coin toss for me going into the DSA like general meetings and like the meetings where you have all the working groups. There's this one group who's like, yeah, we're going to get into ecological matters. And there was this other group and they're like, we're socialist feminists. And I was like, I guess I'm going to, well, I can talk to these people about Judith Butler. All right, let's just do that. Which is good because the eco-socialist movements are kind of wacky at this point.
Yeah.
They're just contending with, I love this. The Pleistocene movements.
Oh boy, all yeah. These words.
I know. I don't know if I'm saying it right. But there's a wide spectrum of ecological movements.
And,
like people
and
who.
And Butchin goes off on like all of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
He goes off on the anarcho-primitivists. He goes off on the biocentrists. He goes off on like every criticism from every ecological standpoint that he
also just goes off on everyone.
Yeah, and,
I loved when he went off on the internet, the social. Oh, I can't talk. Sorry, I got him like.
No, you're good.
Yeah, when he's going off on Guy Debord.
Ugh, the Situationists. Yeah, yeah, he was kicked out of the Situationists. So he was never even a part of them.
Well, yeah, they invited him in, actually, and he refused because they were always kicking people out.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, I don't want to be a part of a group that kicks people out and, like, has some kind of high-minded understanding that, like, the media is influencing us all and that, like, all we have to do is deal with the spectacle somehow.
Yeah.
Which is,
the part of the video I sent you the other day where I was like, oh, at an hour 10, Grandpa goes off. He's going off. He's like... talking about black liberation groups, and he's like, so the white man is the enemy. What the white man who is homeless, that's also your enemy? Like, what's that? And then he was going off on the feminists, and he was saying, like the same thing, basically. Like,
yeah.
Or like similar things. Like, you know, these are all.
In fighting, you'll get caught up in it.
And then going, you know, I don't know, just going off on everyone.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's like a great stance to take where you end up just being like the wise man who says, here's the problem with this. And then at the end of the day, people are like, well, what can we look towards? And he's like, and then he just holds a little sprout in his palm. And he's just like, look at this.
Check this guy out.
Yeah, just keep focusing on that.
That's because that is a common, it's a really important common cause.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not to say that he dismiss, like I said before, he doesn't dismiss feminist movement or Black Art Liberation movement. He really acknowledges both, like, a lot.
Yeah, after spending time actually, like, coalition building with everybody.
Not just critiquing everybody, coalition with everybody. Yeah. That's
he was also hanging out with Ben Maria.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Ben, haven't heard about him in a while.
He's got, we're going, making a loop back to some of our earliest episodes, but Bookchin talks about how Ben Maria and, like, all the up against the wall motherfuckers were using violence to alienate all of these peace groups, and eventually they alienated themselves out of relevance.
Yeah, but not to say that he was against a lot of what they stood for. Like,
well, they were hanging out the same apartment together, shooting the shit, going to events, hanging, what, you know, drinking beers, whatever the fuck. But like, then he, you know, Bookchin is just saying, like, yeah, but, you know, Maria started going off, like, at these discussions, at these roundtables, and, like, at these other moments when it was completely uncalled for. And then, like, he realized that there wasn't like a control to the violence, and it actually, while it was, like, very impactful, and it was, like, in some sort of an anarchist spirit, it actually didn't have the fortitude to, like, build a community on top of that. Even though, like, you know, there was a lot of community movements, like, to bring awareness to the issues of, like, how trashed the Lower East Side was getting and how people didn't have, like, food distribution. And there was a lot of good that was done that got really lost.
Yeah, and it's a good, nuanced point. I think it's really key for everybody to approach everything with a nuance and an open mind and coalition building as the main way forward. That's, like, basically the idea of anarcho-communism is we're going to build together. We're all the left.
Yeah. So if you want to go nuts, then, you know, don't do it at a peace rally.
But then I feel for Maria, because it's like all of the hippie people must have been frustrating.
Oh, yeah, completely insufferable. Well, Bookchin talks about that too.
Yes.
Yeah, he's like, oh my god, all of these. He had this whole like, he goes off on the hippies in New York, that, like, they're all going around Manhattan, and then they're settling in like Puerto Rican neighborhoods, and then, like, the issues of like cultural presentation of women's bodies were the catalyst for a lot of, like, racial tension and violence. And just hearing somebody break it down like that, like, you know what? Sometimes it's not cool to walk around with your tits out. Sometimes that just offends other people's sensibilities, and it's not about, like, changing their mind.
It could be white supremacist in certain contexts. Whoops.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Like, I know it's, like, complicated. Like, you don't know what's best. Like, the idea that you know what's best is a problem. Like, especially if you're a white person newly moving into a neighborhood.
Right. And all you know is that, like, you know what? That Haight Ashbury told me it was okay.
Yeah. What a weird. Yeah. I mean, he hates the cities also. So it's like, to him, it would be better if we could deconstruct the need for cities.
Yeah. He would make everything horizontal.
Yeah. Anarchy or annihilation?
Yeah. He was really good at the one-liners.
So something that we think about a lot is the transition, the transitional stages toward revolution. And he talks about that in Post-Scarcity Anarchism. He says transitional stages cannot exist because they're limited by technology and social deconstruction, and that the revolution needs a new promise. We need to we need a new restructuring of what the revolution is actually going to give people.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense in relationship to the tenets of modernism and the idea that we could feasibly construct our way to a more egalitarian future. It's like, nope, turns out we can construct our way to greater forms of exploitation, more interesting luxuries for fewer people.
Yeah. So what he calls for is an absolute negation of hierarchy, and for a community of organic variation and of rounded ecological communes that are regional, so they would adhere to the specific regional needs, and then he also calls for sexual liberation.
Which is like, yeah. But he's really like living moment by moment in the dialectics of everything that he's proposing, because while he's like, yeah, I love liberation, but then it's like, well, when do all of these sticking points occur between people's like interest in maintaining their community through their own traditions that they feel close to? And then when is it all right to be like your own I don't know. Yeah, it's
hard to form a lot like alongside more orthodox groups like we were talking about before, but it's just something that we have to contend with if we really are serious.
And then I like that finally, once we're able to achieve a class consciousness that has been like fully realized as a self-consciousness, then he talks about spontaneous involvement in a revolution, and that like looking back at every time there's ever been a general populist movement, it's always begun spontaneously. No one has ever been able to actually like generate it by having you just don't know when it's going to happen. There's nothing that you can't say like, oh well, I'm gonna manufacture a crisis in resources and then people are just going to get out into the streets. It takes a lot of different understandings and people agreeing, and then like,
yeah,
you weird. can't make it up. You can't make this stuff up, folks.
Regional
theater.
I guess it's a good place to end. I really just encourage people to just listen to Post-Scarcity Anarchism themselves. It's really good. It'll get you thinking in a different way, which is good. I mean, because like the ways that people have been thinking the past decade or so, it's just sort of leading to dead ends. Like I think it's like incumbent on us to, pull from a variety of sources.
Yeah, pull from a variety of sources. Think about stuff that is like clearly beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's just, if you're ever wondering how not to be coercive, just like think about taking care of water.
You know, that's still not taken care of.
Everybody needs water. You're just not going to fuck that up if you, like, learn how to take care of that resource. You could fuck it up if you do it wrong, but, you know, try and, you know, I don't know. There's just I've always been like, wow, all of these political concepts can get really confusing. And then everyone argues about, like, what kind of leftist they are. And then everyone's like, well, we should be at the border, or we got to go to France. We got to support the French.
And like, gotta go to Brazil.
It's really important. I'm going to go to the Mariana Islands, and I'm going to check out what's happening with this bombing stuff. I'm going to stop that from Brooklyn.
Fuck. I mean, yeah, I think it's good to really root yourself. I've talked about this before, where you are, and just get involved where you are, and, you know, don't try not to have the mindset of, like, oh, I'm just here temporarily for my career or whatever the fuck, like, garbage people tell themselves to act like tourists in their own fucking home. Like, I think it's not a good mindset to have. In particular in New York City, but, like, you know.
But also, understandably, we know that a lot of people only live in places for 1 or 2 years, and it is hard to have a sense of stewardship over a thing that feels like a lazy Susan of rent.
I don't like when people do that. But I get why they have to sometimes, but it's just like, if you're here, you're here. Then let's, like, I don't know, just take in your surroundings and see what's going on.
Look around you.
Yeah, put definitely. That down in your copybooks. I don't know.
I don't know either. And that's, I mean, these issues are pretty insurmountable, but I do know, like, you can't go wrong with planting a tree. You can't go wrong with, like, oh, we should just, maybe people need water filters. Maybe they need to get some lead out of their water. Oh, okay. Like, there's simple stuff that, like, oh, do homeless people need blankets? Yeah, totally. Just, like, start there.
I don't know, man. Sometimes I get, like, I'm fuck off and join a commune. But there's a more holistic way to approach these things.
Maybe we could do a residency where we go off the grid and then we just, like, pod from the solar farm where we make, like, soy sprouts and we, like, compost.
Yeah, compost our own urine into water or whatever.
Yeah, make fucking overalls out of hemp.
Oh, man. Just do the whole thing.
Next summer, catch us on the commune. Oh, my
God. We're fucking off. We're doing it. We're fucking off into the commune.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I guess I'll catch you guys next time.
Yeah.
Let's have fun.
Let's have fun.
Take care, everybody, of each other.
Happy holidays.
Wow.
Happy holidays. I care if you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and make it have a fantasy. It doesn't really matter if you drive a limousine. It really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. I really don't care if you just drive a truck. I care if you just drive a limousine. It doesn't really matter if you drive a Ferrari. I really don't care, cause I just love your company. Lots of fun. Let's have fun, let's have fun. Let's have fun, let's have fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun, lots of fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun, let's have fun. Lots of fun.